This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Now, Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program, Truth in Broadcasting.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from our affiliate KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona, where this afternoon we'll be at the Harkins Theater. You can learn all about that on their website. It's Friday. Lou Dobbs is going to be with us in the second hour. It should be an interesting conversation. And one of the people that he speaks of very highly in his new book, actually, of course, as always on Friday, starts our show. Bernie Sanders, going on 5 years now, I think. Brunch with Bernie, Senator Bernie Sanders, the independent from Vermont. His website, sanders.senate.gov. And I think of him as America's senator, although he's doing a great job representing Vermont as well. Bernie, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you here with us. A lot going on. The economy, the Dow is down again today. It's been falling like a stone. The dollar, too. What's up?
Well, you know, Mr. Bernanke, the head of the Fed, has announced that the economy is in trouble, which should come as no shock to the vast majority of the people in our country who, for years now, have been working longer hours, in many cases for lower wages. But it contradicts the Bush administration's mythology that we have a robust economy where everything is going well, and I think it's rattled the stock market quite a bit. The reality is, of course, that for the middle class, what we have seen since Bush has been in office is a $2,000 decline in household median income. We have seen people losing good-paying jobs as they have to take service industry jobs that force them to work incredibly long hours for low wages. Since Bush has been in office, some 7 million people, Tom, have lost their health insurance. We have 5 million more people living in poverty. You have 35 million people in this country who at one point or another in the course of a year don't have enough food to eat. You have people who are a couple of paychecks away from financial ruin. So there is real stress in the middle class today. And, you know, you and I have talked about this, and you have written a book on this. And that is the major untold story from the corporate media, and in fact here in Congress, is the collapse of the American middle class and the reality that what we're seeing is a nation in which the people on top are making out like bandits. Last Forbes magazine recently reported that the top 400 individuals in this country saw a $180 billion increase in their incomes in the course of a year, while poverty in America increases. So what you're seeing is the largest gap between the rich and the poor, an issue that is virtually not discussed here in Congress. The bottom line here is that Mr. Bernanke's statement may be a shock to the President of the United States, but certainly not to working families.
Yeah, yeah. Mr. Mukasey was confirmed.
At about 11:30 last night, Mr. Mukasey was confirmed. I was, I believe, the first member of the Senate to say that I would not vote against them, and many reasons, but two basic ones. I mean, this issue of waterboarding, which makes us look pathetic, I think, around the world when we talk about freedom, we talk about human dignity. And we have a fellow who is now the Attorney General who says he's not sure that waterboarding is tortured. You know, waterboarding was used during the Spanish Inquisition. Do you know that?
Yeah, I think that that's pretty much where it originated. Is what I've heard.
And you know, we prosecuted Japanese officials for using waterboarding against American soldiers. And so again, it continues the process by which people all over the world shake their heads and wonder what is going on in the United States. It makes it harder for us to put together the kinds of coalitions that we need to fight Islamic fanaticism, and it's unfortunate. The other issue, I think, even more importantly, is we have a president who, as I've said many times, will probably go down in history as the worst president we've ever had, and who has been even worse in certain areas. And one of them certainly has been the whole issue of civil liberties. he believes that under the guise of fighting terrorism, essentially, really don't have to worry about Congress. You really don't have to worry about the law. You don't have to worry about an independent judiciary. You can do pretty much what you want to do. And when questioned about this, Mukasey was far from clear in explaining that we have a constitution and that even under the guise of fighting terrorism, which, by the way, this president thinks is going to go on into the indefinite future, that there are laws and rules and a constitution that a president must obey.
Yeah, indeed. Global warming is on the
Let me give you the bad news and the good news. And I think many listeners know this. The bad news is that the scientists are telling us that their initial projections regarding global warming were probably conservative, that the heat is, that the Earth is warming faster than they had anticipated. The ice caps at the polar regions are melting faster than they had anticipated, and that we need bolder action in order to stem global warming. I introduced the strongest global warming bill, which would cut greenhouse gas emissions by 80% by the year 2050. And that may be, in fact, too conservative. That's the bad news. The good news, I'll tell you what the good news is. What we're seeing more and more, both in the real world in terms of what cities and states are doing, and what scientists and engineers are telling us, we know how to solve this problem. The potential of energy efficiency is just extraordinary. In my city of Burlington, Vermont, where we have a publicly owned utility, we, despite growth, good growth in the city in the last 15 years, our city is not consuming more electricity than we used to because of energy efficiency. California, over a 30-year period, per capita, their electric consumption has remained leveled despite a lot of growth. So the argument that you have to reduce your standard of living and go living in a hut or a cave as we reduce fuel consumption is wrong. Energy efficiency has enormous potential. The other very good news, Tom, is there is increased discussion and real movement toward the solar-powered plants in the Southwest. Pacific Gas and Electric has signed an agreement with a company to break ground in 2 years, to be online in 4 years, to producing 535 megawatts of electricity that would provide electricity to 400,000 homes through a solar plant. And the cost of that electricity is quite competitive, and the estimate is that, in fact, over a period of time, solar plant electricity will be cheaper than many other forms of electricity. There is huge potential out there, and we're working with some of the people in that industry to see how we can start producing the kind of solar-powered electricity that can have a meaningful impact on what we're doing in this country. There is a wind turbine that apparently has hit the market now, which will cost $10,000, that a small wind turbine that can be used in homes throughout rural America, which can provide 40% of the electricity that a home needs. So if we get the federal government actively involved, as California is now doing, with tax credits and with rebates, helping people purchase these sustainable energy technologies, we can go a very, very, very long way to lowering carbon dioxide emissions and reverse global warming. And, by the way, create millions of jobs if we are building the photovoltaics, if we are building the wind turbines, if we are getting involved in geothermal in this country.
Yeah, that's a marvelous thing. I understand also you and Jan Schakowsky have introduced some legislation about private contractors. Tell me about that.
Well, absolutely. I think there is an outrage in this country about companies like Blackwater for a number of reasons. I mean, here you have a military organization operating presumably for the United States of America in Iraq doing what they want without operating with outside of the rules of the United States military and of the United States government. As I think many listeners know, they have killed people. There have been scandals there. They are not accountable. Meanwhile, in the midst of that, in some cases, their salaries are phenomenally high, much higher than the average GI fighting in Iraq. So this impacts the morale of our fighting men and women who are wondering why the guy down the road is making more than a four-star general when they are exposed to the same risk. So what you're looking at, this is part of Bush's and Cheney's whole privatization scheme, you're looking at a two-tier military. You have one group of private people who can make $1,000 a day. The other guys are making, you know, a fraction of it. Their families may be on food stamps, both exposed to the same danger. So what Congresswoman Schakowsky and I believe is that we have got to end that practice and once again let the United States military run our armed forces.
Yeah, sounds like a great idea. Worked for 220, 30 years, whatever. It's crazy what they've been doing. It's Senator Bernie Sanders with us, our Brunch with Bernie Hour. He'll be taking your calls at 866-303-2270 right after this break. His website, sanders.senate.gov, ours, tomhartman.com, airamerica.com. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. The Tom Hartman Program. Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Sanders.Senate.gov is website. And Bernie, ready for some phone calls?
Sure.
Okay. Brian in Boulder, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, gentlemen. Senator, I believe it was Arlen Specter, I'm not sure, who said that he could vote for Mukasey because Mukasey said something about if a law were passed against waterboarding, he would certainly enforce it. My question is, what objections would you have to doing everything humanly possible to pass such a law and preferably enlarge it to cover the Geneva Convention?
Well, I want you to take a deep breath and think about the question that you asked me. You said the Attorney General of the United States would actually enforce a law that Congress passed. Well, I think we have very low standards when that is what we think is a good day for an Attorney General. The fact of the matter is that waterboarding is illegal. And if we start passing legislation making explicitly waterboarding illegal tomorrow, and then the next day it's electric shock, and the next day it's this, and the next day it's that, all of that, we are a party to the Geneva Convention. This stuff is already illegal, and I am not impressed by an Attorney General who says that he will enforce the law that a Congress passes. Of course, he must do that. So that's my answer to that.
Okay. Donna in San Diego, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, hi. Hi, Tom, and hi, Bernie.
Hi.
Senator Sanders. My question, been hearing a lot about Iran and Bush's wanting to go to Iran. Is that, coming from the inside of the Beltway, how much is that a possibility? It's very scary.
You know, Donna, that is a good question. I and a number of other senators have introduced resolutions. We've written letters making it very, very clear to this president that a war against Iran would be an unmitigated disaster. It would essentially start us, I think, in a never-ending war, asymmetrical war, I should suggest, with the Muslim world. It can impact our troops in Iraq right now. Certainly will lead to mass amounts of terrorism against the United States. And at a time when the American people are demanding that we get out of Iraq, when the situation in Afghanistan is getting worse with the resurgence of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda moving into Afghanistan, the idea of starting a war with Iran is incomprehensible. I wish I could tell you, Donna, that there is no chance of that happening. But you have people, and I should also tell you that the Secretary of Defense, Mr. Gates, thinks that that would be a very dumb idea. But you have the neocons there, especially people like the Vice President and others, who believe that, what can I say, they think war is apparently a solution to every problem, and they remain strong. So we are going to do our best, absolutely, to tell this President that he has got to come to Congress. If he came to Congress, I don't think he would get the authority, and we will continue to do everything we can to stop that. It would be madness.
Well said. Bob in Brooklyn, New York, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Thank you, Senator. I agree with everything you say about wind power and solar power. We have an energy crisis right now. I have read numerous books about the Middle East and terrorism. Saudi Arabia and the other countries in the Gulf have an enormous supply of oil. Anytime they want, Saudi Arabia can open up the faucet and drop the price of oil to below $20 a barrel. Now, I've read books by Richard Clark, also a book called House of Bush, House of Saud, and recently a book by Robert Baer called Sleeping with the Devil. Saudi Arabia, the royal family, supports terrorism. They give money to the madrasas. Money finds its way to Al-Qaeda and these Wahhabi fundamentalists. But apparently, the royal family is in bed with both politicians from both political parties, Democrats and Republicans. There's a lot of dirty money in Washington, D.C. Now, how are we going to end this relationship with Saudi Arabia?
Well, Bob, I think a lot of what you're saying is true. We don't talk a whole lot about Saudi Arabia because our dependence on them for oil. But there is no question that the royal family there, and it's a very large family, and all the subsets of that family are extraordinarily wealthy, just huge amounts of money. And there is no question that some of that money goes into Islamic fundamentalism and ultimately into terrorism. I mean, I think the simplest way for us to be able to deal with that authoritarian government is to break our dependency on oil, which gets back to the point that I made a little while ago, that I think if we move vigorously forward in terms of energy efficiency and sustainable energy, we don't need their oil. If we were driving cars in this country that got the same mileage per gallon that they do in Europe or Japan, we don't need their oil and would have the freedom there to have a political approach toward that authoritarian regime that we should.
Yeah. So, Harry in Boulder, Colorado, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
The reason I'm calling today is, Senator Sanders, I would like to thank you, sir, and Mr. Hartman for your support for the American way. I'm really taken aback by the fact that we have privately owned but publicly funded mercenary armies fighting a fever.
And the land is dark, and the moon is the only light we'll see.
Well, now we're seeing the light of democracy here in America. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We're broadcasting live from Phoenix, and sometimes when we're on the road and doing remotes like this, things get a little spooky. And I think we crashed that last break. My apologies. Bernie, do you recall the question?
I think the question dealt with private contractors and the need to deal with that. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky and I have introduced legislation which would eliminate private contracting in war zones like Iraq. The idea that Blackwater soldiers operate without being under the guidelines of the United States military or the United States government, that they act in some cases with impunity, they do bad things, they don't get punished. The idea that they make far, far more money than do American soldiers seems to me to be absurd, and we are trying to eliminate that.
Okay. Tom in Sleepy Hollow, New York. You're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
You want to go to Tom in New York?
Yes, Tom
okay,
in New York.
Okay, Senator Sanders, as you know, the Mukasey vote was scheduled at the last minute, very suddenly, not allowing the Democratic candidates of a campaign in Iowa, several of whom had said they'd opposed Mukasey, to get back to vote. And I'm wondering why, given that circumstance and given the fact that you opposed Mukasey, why you didn't stand up and oppose the unanimous consent that allowed the vote, since there were less than 60 votes for Mukasey's confirmation, and you could have delayed it, allowing them to come back to a vote and have a real debate on the subject.
Well, Tom, I think you make a good point. I think that situation with Mukasey was not handled well. I think the timing, as you indicate, caught many of us by surprise. And it turns out, in retrospect, that we would have had fought that, and we would have had the vote.
You could have essentially filibustered it.
Yeah, we could have. And in retrospect, there was some discussion of that, and then one of the problems we had is we didn't know how many votes in opposition. I think the vote turned out to be larger than we had anticipated. in retrospect, I think we made a mistake.
Huh, interesting. Alan in Beverly Hills, California. You're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Okay, hi. I want to ask you a question. If this CHIP program for the children, for millions of children, were actually signed by Bush, when would the children actually get the health care? What date? And the other question, quick, I would have asked McCasey if I was a senator, have you seen the movie The Good Shepherd? And if he said no, I'd say, well, I assign you, go see it tonight, rent the video, and come back tomorrow and tell me if waterboarding is torture. Someone, that should have been said, but when would the millions, if it was passed, when would the children actually get the health care?
I don't have the bill in front of me, but I think the S-CHIP program is a very widely used program right now. What this would do is add 4 million more children to the program. My assumption is that it will be pretty soon.
Okay. Richard in Seattle, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Oh, thank you very much. Hello, Senator Bernie.
Hi, how are you?
I wanted to ask the question about alternative energy technology.
Good.
There's a company called Hydrogen Hybrid Technologies who recently got a contract for fleet vehicles in Korea to install what is essentially a hybrid hydrogen cracking technology where you make hydrogen on the vehicle and then use it to inject into the fuel system. It reduces emissions tremendously. It increases fuel mileage considerably. And I just wonder, I'd love to install this on my vehicle here at home, but it would be very much more affordable if there were some sort of a government subsidy or tax rebate or something like that that would make it more affordable. Because this, I mean, it's like $2,500.
Richard, I am not. I have driven actually a couple of hydrogen cars. In fact, we got some money for a hydrogen type car in Vermont to experiment and see how that works in cold weather situations. I'm not familiar with the particular technology you're talking about. I know there are a number of prototypes out there. I don't think they're quite ready to get to the market. But it goes without saying that if we are serious about dealing with global warming, we've got to look at technologies like hydrogen, and the federal government should be investing substantially in those technologies.
Jevin in Chicago, Illinois. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Senator Bernie Sanders. This is Javon. I'm calling because I have I want to try to put this as best as I can, but I've noticed that when Pelosi was put into office, she was very, you know, adamant about, you know, making change and everything. But it seems as though as soon as they had closed door talks with Bush, you know, she came out and then, you know, the impeachment was off the table. The Democrats started acting funny and started voting different ways. Does this pertain to the wiretapping that's been going on, like, before, you know, even any of the laws that came out about wiretapping? It seems as though the wiretapping is influencing. Do you believe that wiretapping is influencing our Democratic government to a point where they're making decisions because of...
In other words, Javon, are you asking if Bernie thinks that maybe the Bush administration has got some dirt on some Democrats by listening on their phones?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I think the reality that you have, you have a couple of realities. Number one, to get anything done in the Senate, we in fact need to stop Republican filibusters, which requires 60 votes, and we don't have 60 votes. Secondly, it's not like the Democratic Party is some kind of unified organization where they're all progressives, they're all prepared on every issue to fight for working families and stand up to George Bush. That's just not the case, as I think most people know. The Democratic Party is a centrist party. And you got some very conservative Democrats who vote for trade agreements, who vote for tax breaks for the rich, who are not going to stand up to McCasey, et cetera, et cetera. So the difficulty is in the Senate, you have a tiny, tiny margin. It's 51-49, but that includes on foreign policy Senator Lieberman, who votes with the Republicans. And in the House, the margin is a little bit stronger, but you have some conservatives there as well. So, no, I don't think there's any great conspiracy going on. I think the Republicans in the Senate have filibustered, I think, on 52 occasions. They are doing everything they can to stop good legislation from being passed. And in the House, you have differences of opinion. So I think we can understand why what's going on without looking into blackmailing situations here.
Yeah, and the bottom line is we just need to get more progressive Democrats.
The bottom line is, I mean, where we are right now, Tom, is, you know, sometimes we lose that in the midst of the day-to-day bustle. What we are doing now is stopping, to some degree, right-wing extremism. If you and I were having this discussion as we did a year ago, you had Bush in the White House, you had Tom DeLay as the leader of the Congress, Bill Frisk as leader of the Senate, and the most right-wing government in the history of America. That's not the case right now. On the other hand, it would not be telling the truth to say that you have a progressive Congress. You don't have a progressive Congress. You have a moderate Congress, a centrist Congress, dealing with a right-wing extremist in the White House. That's the political dynamic. Where we have got to move is toward a progressive Congress, electing progressives to the Senate, progressives to the House, and getting rid of right-wing extremism in the White House.
Yeah. Amen. Teresa in San Francisco, California, on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi. Thank you, Bernie, for making yourself available to us on a regular basis.
Thanks, Teresa.
I'm one of those people who now delivers papers where I used to work in some corporate and nonprofit realms. I just wanted everybody to know, this is regarding private contractors, I read an article put out by AP that we have private contractors cleaning up our oil spill in San Francisco, but there's no explanation as to why they're there. It's called the O'Brien Group. I'm livid. I'm a fourth generation San Franciscan, and I'm just so upset about it. Left and right. There's all these things going wrong, and why do we have private contractors cleaning up our oil spill?
As opposed, Teresa, to the oil companies themselves, you mean?
I don't know. The article doesn't say why they're there. The article quotes the Coast Guard chief in charge, and then the next paragraph, it quotes the incident commander of the O'Brien Group, and then it goes on to something else. Kind of like, I mean, you know, it's like we're supposed to just accept this with no questions. There's no, I don't know. We need to do something about this.
Well,
Bernie, I know you're busy, but if there's anything you can
do. Well, we
are.
Teresa, thank you very much, because you're touching on a very important issue. And the issue is that what has happened in this country for the last 30 years is that you've had people like Bush and Reagan and many others attacking government. It's terrible. Clearly, the only people who can do anything are large multinational corporations. And the extreme example of that is what is happening in Iraq right now, where we have tens of thousands of private contractors representing the United States of America, carrying weapons, but not under the control of the United States military or the United States government. That's the extreme. Back here in this country, it is no secret. Bush has made it very clear. He would like to privatize huge numbers of jobs and functions. These guys don't believe in Social Security. You should have private insurance. They don't believe in Medicaid or Medicare. Have private health insurance. They don't believe in public education. They don't believe the government should be doing anything. All of that, or virtually all of that, should be in the hands of private profit-making corporations. The end result of that is that we're seeing, for example, our infrastructure decaying all over America because we don't support public institutions. We are not addressing global warming in the way that we should be doing it. A caller a few minutes ago talked about why we're not putting more money into hydrogen. Well, the answer is that we have very powerful institutions like the coal industry, the oil industry, you know, big money energy, that prefer to keep us into fossil fuels. So the issue here is making sure that we have a government capable of performing the services that the American people need.
Yeah. Amen. It's rolling back Reaganomics, I guess.
Yes, and neoconservatives.
Indeed. 45 minutes past the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls. His website, sanders.senate.gov. Ours, tomhartman.com and airamerica.com. 866-303-2270. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio.
And welcome back. 9 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us this hour, taking your calls at 866-303-2270. Bill in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi. Thanks very much for taking my call. Thanks for your great show, and thank you to Senator Sanders for his leadership on the global warming issue. I've helped play a small part in getting Senator Casey on his bill. I'm trying to get Senator Spector. I haven't met with him yet. I did sort of diplomatically confront Senator Casey at a public forum last spring, and I think that helped.
Well, Bill, thanks. We don't have any Republicans on the bill yet at all, so if you could get Senator Specter on, that would be great.
Well, that's my question. Is any suggestions from you on how to proceed other than, you know, sort of obviously trying to meet with him and get press? And
I think what is happening is the American people, just by seeing what's going on day by day, whether it's the drought in Georgia or the forest fires in California, or the terrible drought in Australia, or the, you know, Hurricane Katrina. People are seeing day by day how serious this problem is, and they understand that if we don't act boldly, it's only going to get worse. But I have to tell you that the Congress is way, way, way behind the American people. Within the Republican Party, I think there is some movement. You still have some people who really do not believe that global warming is reality, and others who are more interested in protecting special interests like coal or oil than they are in moving vigorously. So we really need a grassroots effort. And I know in Vermont we have Bill McKibben from Middlebury College doing a great job with stepping up. But at the grassroots, we need to put pressure on politicians to say, hey, the future of the planet is at stake. This is not politics as usual. Start doing the right thing and support the strongest legislation out there to reverse global warming.
Dave in Buffalo, New York. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Well, Tom, Bernie?
Yes.
I'd like to offer you a wordsmith for us, for America. And when we're able to raise or increase the tax bracket on the top 20% to, let's say, 90%, we can call it beautifying America. And when they decrease or try to when those people who've got an increase try and decrease that beautifying America, we'll call it polluting America.
Interesting. Well, reframing the language, Bernie?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Dave makes a point, and that there is a lot of discussion that the Republicans have done a better job than progressives in framing issues and coming up with short titles to legislation, et cetera. For example, the so-called death tax. And there are probably millions of people out there saying, oh, my God, my family is going to be taxed when I die. And they don't understand that the repeal of the inheritance tax, as of today, applies only to the wealthiest 0.3%, and we'd be giving a tax break of $1 trillion over a 20-year period to the very, very, very wealthiest people in this country. 99.7% of the people will not benefit, except to pick up an increased $1 trillion national debt. But they frame those issues well, and they come up with nifty titles. But I think, going back to Dave's point, we have got to address this growing disparity between the rich and the poor. We have got to understand that the income of the 400 wealthiest Americans last year increased by $290 billion. How's that, Tom?
Wow.
Averaging $750 million per person for the top 400. Well, the average American is probably working longer hours for low wages. That's what's going on in America. We need a tax policy that addresses that reality.
Yeah, indeed. Richard in Nevada City, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes. Bernie, you said it was a mistake was made with the McKenzie vote, but I'm not satisfied with that answer. It seems to be an attitude of weakness that is allowing Congress to enable this lawless, unconstitutional regime. You say we need 60 votes or 67 votes to make laws, but you only need 41 votes to block appointments and bad laws from passing. So why aren't progressive senators using the power that you have?
Well, for a start, there are all that. As I indicated, things moved very, very quickly yesterday. I did not know that there was, nor did I think any other senator know that there was going to be a vote on McKenzie until the evening. There were some senators who were not there. We did not know that there would be that many senators prepared to vote in opposition. Having said that, as I mentioned earlier ago, I think we should have organized better. And if we had filibustered, I think we could have stopped the appointment. It was a mistake.
Yeah, and let's add, you're not a Democrat.
And I'm not a Democrat. And that's, I'm not on the Judiciary Committee, and I'm part of the leadership. But having said that, I, like other senators, I think could have done better.
Yeah. Philip in San Diego, California, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good morning, gentlemen. First of all, Tom, I want to let you know that this is probably the last day we're going to hear you on KLSD because our radio station is done here. So I wanted to thank you for all the wonderful morning program you've been giving us
You're welcome, and I understand that there are a couple of other radio stations sniffing around, and we may be back on in San Diego in short order. So,
well, hopefully, but what concerns me today and what I want to talk to Senator Sanders is that I've heard like other markets, too, are going to start going through this, and the excuse that we got here for them to turn KLSD into a sports radio station was that it wasn't selling enough commercial time. You know, they had 10-minute spot breaks, but they weren't selling enough commercial time. This coming as we're building up to attack Iran, as elections are coming up, and I just feel like it's a censoring of progressive thought and talk here in San Diego, because all we're going to have now is exclusively conservative talk radio, Christian radio, and sports radio. And I wonder if the senator has ever considered putting in any legislation to regulate this, to make the markets fair.
Well, the answer is, Phil, this is an issue that we have dealt with and are dealing with. We were able to stop a couple of years ago Bush's effort to so-called deregulate the media, which would have allowed for even more media concentration than currently exists. But you are touching on an issue of huge consequence, because we're not going to be successful politically if the American people don't have an alternative, hear an alternative point of view.
Indeed. And there's an FCC hearing in Seattle for our listeners in Seattle. I believe it's tonight. Senator Bernie Sanders. Bernie, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
Great having you with us.
Bye-bye.
57 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio. You're tuned into the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Talk radio for the rest of us.
And welcome back. It's Anything Goes Friday. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-303-2270. I was amazed this morning. I'm here in Phoenix. They put a USA Today in front of my hotel room door. You know how you get one, you get up in the morning and walk out, and there it is. And the top story, right up at the top, above the fold, George Bush Sr. talking about how wonderful life is in Iraq compared to what it would be if Saddam Hussein was still in power. I don't know what to say. I'm astounded. First, that he would say such a thing, and secondly, that USA Today would put it on their front page. It was like a half page ad for the Bush family. Amazing. In the meantime, Senator Chuck Hagel, the Republican, reiterated his call for President Bush to pursue an offer of direct, unconditional, and comprehensive talks with Iran. That's a quote from him. So, of course, John Bolton, who was on this show earlier in the week, going on CNN, flipping it around. I don't think Iran's going to be chit-chatting about its nuclear weapons. Yeah, so Hagel says, well, our current strategy hasn't been working so well, don't you think? We can't dictate. We can't say we don't like your government. Therefore, you're going to have to change your government because you're going to have to play by our rules. That's gotten us to be in a lot of trouble. You engage. You find common denominator interests. Chuck Hagel, one of the few rational Republicans, and therefore, of course, one of the ones who's about to resign and leave office. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Mary in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Mary, you're on the air. What's up?
Hi. I wanted to talk to you about the FCC hearing. I know you mentioned it briefly. But it seems like it's a lot more important than that. It's the last FCC hearing before the conservative head of it has already told his intentions to go ahead and let there be more media consolidation.
Right. Being on the road here, I don't have the details in front of me. I did have it printed out on a sheet back in Portland. Do you know where and when it is for our listeners in Seattle?
It's at 4:00 at the town hall. I saw you all there, you know, a couple of months ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's close to downtown at Seneca and 6th. Okay. But I'm sure if anyone went online, they could find the exact address. But it's basically a little bit east of downtown. But it's really important. It's the last one.
Yeah.
last hearing before they make that decision.
Yep.
So let's
encourage our listeners in Seattle to get down to Town Hall for the 4 o'clock meeting. You might want to get there early. And,
that's right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And the way we are around here, it'll probably be packed. But I just want to make sure that they get an overwhelming response from us.
Yep, you're doing good, Mary.
Everyone else.
Thank you very much.
Take care. You bet.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, appreciate it. Frank in Colorado. Hey, Frank, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. It's a great pleasure. My concerns today deal with Iran, and my concern that this is actually a fait accompli, and we need to look down the road here, particularly those people that are in the middle and lower income brackets. After we have another photo op with Bush saying that the mission there has been accomplished, then we move forward to the need for boots on the ground. And you know where they're going to come from. If we don't have enough troops because we're so spread out over the world, that the only other choices I see, voila, would be mercenaries or the draft. And
Bush will go with the mercenaries before he'll go with the draft. I mean, he's handing billions of dollars to these private contractors. He would love to hand billions more because they're very good, loyal Republican supporters.
Exactly.
And a draft causes problems. And frankly, I don't think that there'll be a draft. I doubt that we'll have ground troops in Iran. I think that he thinks that he can have a surgical airstrike and that'll be the end of it. But the backlash, I mean, I'm far more concerned about this turning into a regional war that we may not even be involved in. I mean, we may just have to step back and just watch the whole thing melt down. But, you know, like World War One, I mean, you know, the early days of World War One, you have all these mutual defense pacts, including one between Iran and Iraq right now. Our soldiers in Iraq, if this thing melts down really fast and really inflames the Middle East, could be the ones caught in the crosshairs. I mean, they might not be able to get out fast enough. I mean, the potential consequences of an attack on Iran there's such a huge spectrum from, you know, almost nothing at all, like a couple months ago when Syria was attacked by Israel and they said that they blew up a nuclear reactor on the one hand, to a World War One style domino falling conflagration throughout that region that might even extend all the way to Indonesia, you know, the country in the world that has the largest Muslim population, you know, in Bali in Indonesia, where the bombings were happening. I mean, into Southeast Asia. I mean, it's just Northern Africa. I mean, it's just incredible how this could go, and that these guys would just even consider it, I think, is nuts, and we need to be speaking out about it. It's just absolutely nuts. Frank, thanks for the call, and your point is well made. Bill in San Francisco. Hey, Bill.
Good morning, Tom. I'd like to offer some good news about political fundraising, and I'd like to do it in the form of a challenge to your listeners. I think that until we have publicly financed elections, we have a tendency to underestimate our strength in numbers. If you have 2 or 3 million listeners, and each of your listeners were to donate, or even 1 million of your listeners would donate $25 right now to their favorite presidential candidate, that candidate would get $25 million.
Right.
That would elevate that candidate roughly to the level of John Edwards, unless that candidate is John Edwards. If your listeners support him, that would almost double his current campaign war chest. So I would encourage your listeners to consider what qualities they want in their chief executive. If they want wisdom, integrity, courage, compassion, heart, I think they have a few ideas who the good candidates might be. For me, my choice is Dennis Kucinich. He can be reached at 877-41-DENNIS. And I hope your listeners will consider calling him or calling their favorite candidate and joining with me. I contributed $50 earlier this week to Kucinich. But I do think that 1 million of your listeners could make a huge difference right now.
Yeah, I agree with you, Bill. And it's interesting watching the phenomena of what just happened on the right with with the congressman from Texas, Ron Paul, getting, you know, raising $5 million just all of a sudden. And I wonder if talk radio had anything to do with that. In fact, they were doing a special on it on CNN as I was running through an airport yesterday, but I didn't catch it. But, I saw it on the screen, trying to deconstruct, where did this money come from? Why did it come all of a sudden? What's going on? But you're absolutely right. We can have a huge influence. And I encourage people to do it. I've given money, I think, 5 times now. I've gone over to John Edwards' site and tossed in a few bucks, and once to Dennis Kucinich's site. And I encourage people to do that, to get out there and get active also. Bill, thank you very much for the call and for your comments. Dan in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Hey, Dan.
Hi, how's it going today?
Just great, but it'll get better. What's up?
I've got a kind of a correlation, or just a kind of a comparison between the private mercenary forces used by the State Department overseas and the S-chip that Bush vetoed. Why are we funding with billions of dollars all these private mercenary companies, and yet when conservatives come to the defense of children saying we must protect their moral values, we're not willing to protect their health?
Right, right. And we're not willing to pay for the private contractors who could help our children, otherwise known as doctors and nurses. So,
and instead of paying the private contractors, I mean, you can still pay them some money, but put some of those funds towards our youth who are our future.
Right.
And yet, I don't know if it's just a matter of they want to keep money in the cronies' pocket or whatever. It's just our most valuable assets.
It's partly that. Yeah, it's partly that. It's partly that they don't want to have a draft, that the demands for military activity. I mean, the second largest army in Iraq right now is mercenaries. And, mercenaries from countries all over the world. I mean, South Africa, Angola, Southeast Asia, Australia. I mean, American companies are hiring mercenaries from all over the world, and they're being paid with your and my tax dollars.
And classic political thought is, said and dictated that private mercenary companies or mercenaries in general are hard to control because their allegiance is to the highest bidder.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that the current ones we have right now are not patriotic, but our military that is paid by the government is patriotic in the fact that they get paid so little to be over there, and yet they're still doing a great job.
Yeah. And the whole contractor thing could come back and bite us in the butt. Well said, Dan. Thank you very much. Anything goes Friday, 1-866-303-2270. Anything you want to talk about? This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Stick around, 16 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news. This is Air America Radio.
The market once made sense, but now something's off it. Since your secret meetings in Dick Cheney's office, Exxon. You just take and you take and keep taking, and your concern is a scam, Exxon. It's so clear from the profits you're making that you don't give a damn. Getting rich on the back of this nation, and W's war, Exxon, keep on screwing the next generation. I say, screw you.
No. Here's the thing. It's important to keep in mind that what Exxon is doing, what Walmart is doing, what's happening right across the board, is legal. And rather than, as much as, it's a cute bumper, but as rather than vilifying individual companies, we need to go back to saying we the people have some say in how businesses run in America, to having regulated capitalism like they do in most of the rest of the Western world and the Eastern world as well. Japan is all about this kind of thing, making sure that companies are operating in a way that makes them profit and is operating in the best interests of the people in the country in which they're located. And that's a political problem. That has to do with who we elect. What we're seeing right now, right across the board, is the consequence of 26 years of Reagan policies. From Reagan saying the government is the enemy, is the problem, not the solution, to Bill Clinton saying that the era of big government is over, to George W. Bush right now, to basically taking apart everything he can get his hands on that might be something that would slow down the speed with which businesses are you know, basically going after America. I just don't quite know how to say it beyond that. 1-866-303-2270 is our telephone number. And hang on just a second. This strange stuff happens when we're doing remotes. Okay, Bill in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. You're on the air. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Tom. I've got a question. I have heard so often from the Democratic leadership and other senators, what have you, that, you know, we can't, basically the Democrats can't get much of anything done because we don't have enough of a majority, and we'll get filibustered, we'll get vetoed, what have you. And what I don't understand is why don't they keep, you know, allow things to get filibustered, allow them to get vetoed, keep resubmitting, keep pressing those bills, and let the people know, particularly roughly 70% of Americans that want us out of Iraq as soon as possible, let them know it's the Republicans that are doing this.
Yeah.
Because the alternative that Senator Sanders and a number of people have offered is basically we have to wait until we have a bigger majority, which gives Bush and rest of the crime family a year to, you know, do things.
Yeah, well, Bernie has not said we should wait. I mean, I don't recall if it was last week or the week before.
I don't know if it's wait, but that's
the topic came up about the Democrats introducing legislation over and over and over again, and he was like, "Yeah, that's what should be done." Much of this stuff has to originate in the House, but the model for this, in my mind, is what John Quincy Adams did in 1836. In 1836, John Quincy Adams was a strong opponent of slavery. Slavery was legal in the United States. And he's the son of President John Adams. He had been a president himself. After he was president, after he stepped down as president, he ran for the House of Representatives and was in the House of Representatives in 1836. He kept going on the floor and wanting to talk about slavery. And so the majority of the House passed a law. Or a rule for the House. I mean, by a majority vote, they passed a rule called the gag rule, which said that there will be no discussion of slavery on the floor of the House of Representatives. And every single day for 8 years, John Quincy Adams introduced a piece of legislation that would have made it illegal for Congress to change their rules to gag conversation about slavery or any other topic. And finally, after 8 years, he prevailed. But he did it every single day for 8 years. Now, you know, that's a guy who has the courage of his convictions. And that's what I think we need to see in Congress. And you know, see the Democrats stand up and start taking strong positions. And yes, they can resubmit the same bill over and over and over again. And in my opinion, they absolutely should. Bill, thanks for bringing up the topic. Bonnie in Burgesstown, Pennsylvania. About a minute before a break here, Bonnie. What's up?
I was channel surfing earlier this week when I came across Billow, who had this twisted frame on torture when he said, let's see who would vote against America's using interrogation techniques that would save American lives. And, of course, that plays right into his scaredy cat audience. So I thought about two things, the threat of radical Islamists and the force of fear. And then if you know Marianne Williamson's book, Return to Love, she talks about the two most powerful forces being love and fear.
Yeah, it comes out of A Course in Miracles. Yeah.
Right. So I think the real threat of radical Islamists is bringing down our economy by allowing us to act on our fear, just like Afghanistan played a role in bringing down the old Soviet Union. So my question is, what will we do when other nations start using the euro to buy oil? Because I don't think our economy is that integrated.
No, it's not, and that's the problem. We've shipped so many jobs offshore and so much of our industry offshore that we're pretty much dependent on the dollar being the reserve currency of the world. And when the euro, I don't think it's going to be if, when the euro becomes the reserve currency of the world, it's going to be tough here. It's just going to be tough. 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Well, it may not be legal, but it sure as heck makes me safer. And it may not yield useful intel, at least that's what they say. It's a pleasure so rare, seeing captives gulp air. Let's
this. I'm just reading about this. This 58,000 gallons of heavy-duty bunker fuel oil poured into the San Francisco Bay when the Cusco Busan, if I'm pronouncing it right, this ship hit the Bay Bridge, and what a tragic accident. Or was it what tragic incompetence, whatever it may be. A lot of speculation over at the SF Gate at the San Francisco Chronicle's website. And they have some video there. Thanks for the heads up from the folks in the chat room about that. And, you know, another reminder that our dependence on fossil fuels, that the fossil fuels are basically dirty stuff. You know, it's messy, dirty, gunky, goopy. It kills the life around us, and ultimately, to a certain extent, is killing many of us. And so, you know, the best guess, about $2 per gallon of gasoline. For every gallon of gasoline sold in the United States, there's about $2 worth of health care costs associated with the use of it. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Sharon in Tualatin, Oregon. Hey, Sharon, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Good morning, good afternoon. First, may I tell you that there's going to be a presidential forum at the First Unitarian Church in Portland this Sunday at 4:30.
I think you just did.
Now, my question is, and I was absolutely stunned, when Senator Sanders was talking, he said, when you asked about the voting on the Attorney General, mm-hmm. he said, well, we did not know that it would be so close. And, I mean, I adore Sanders, but did he just say that they're guessing on whether they need to show up or not?
Apparently, yeah. I think he's, you know, probably in a rather gentlemanly way, not willing to do a excuse me a slash and burn attack on Harry Reid, but Harry Reid should have or the Senate leadership basically, they should have known how many votes were out there. They should have done this very methodically and carefully. If they realized that this guy was going to pass by fewer than 60 votes, they should have filibustered it. And that's what Bernie was saying. And not being a Democrat and not being part of the Democratic leadership, he would be the very last person in the Senate who would have the ability to make that happen. So, it's probably a little easier for him to say, geez, we made a mistake and we should have done it differently in retrospect. But, I'm expecting that we're going to see more or hear, you know, more about this, about how this happened and what happened and what this means for the leadership in the Senate and, you know, what Harry Reid's role in this was and, you know, because, it's, Bernie's, yeah.
May I name the six senators that voted for with the Republicans?
Yeah, please do.
Feinstein, Carper, Landrieu, Nelson, Schumer, and Bein.
Yeah.
I'm appalled at this. I really am. And when Bernie said that, I mean, shivers went down my spine, because basically he's saying that this is all guesswork on the Democratic side.
Yeah.
And that terrifies me.
Well, he may be speaking for himself, although it didn't sound like he was. I mean, it may just be that nobody told him. And if he had known that there were not going to be 60 votes, he could have stood up and said, hey, I'm going to filibuster this thing. But but somebody should have. It looks like in some sort of strange way, you know, the fix was in. Anyhow, Sharon, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it. Oops, sorry about that. And Marianne in Seattle, Washington. Here, Marianne.
Hello, did you say Arcata?
Did I say Al-Qaeda? No, I said Marianne in Seattle.
Arcata, that's in Northern California.
Uh-huh.
So we're on the same timeline. Anyway, I was very disconcerted about Senator Sanders' appearance on your program today. You know, he said this was a mistake. Anyway, so I called...
Well, he voted against Mukasey.
Pardon?
He voted against Mukasey.
Oh, okay.
He absolutely voted against him, and so did the majority of the Democratic senators. There were six Democrats who went along.
Okay.
What he was saying is that in his opinion, had the Democratic leadership known, or had the Democrats known, that there weren't going to be 60 votes for Mukasey, they could have stopped the nomination by filibustering it.
Yes. And so I called Senator Reid's office this morning, just before I called your office, you know, mm-hmm. it's a while ago now. Anyway, and the vote was 53 yes and 40 against.
Right.
So there were even seven senators that weren't even there. And and the girl in the office said, I asked why they had put it to a vote so soon, just 2 days after the Senate Judiciary asking me to send it to them. And she said, well, he found that there were so many Democrats that were going to vote yes.
All six of them. And the missing ones, by the way, were the ones who were running for president who were out on the road. And the call for the vote was made so quickly that they didn't have a chance to get back to Washington, D.C. And they're all on the record as saying that they were going to vote against him.
Yeah.
So it looks like the six is all that they had.
Without a debate. Maybe the debate would have changed somewhat. I mean, I don't think they do any research. You do so much research for your program. But all those guys in Senate and the House, I don't know what they do and where they're. Anyway, I called the Congress on Wednesday also to... I got straight through the switchboard and the senator, as I call it, Kucinich. I thanked him for putting this thing on the impeachment on the floor, and I called Pelosi's office. And so anyway, it's in Conyers House Judiciary, the judiciary now,
right?
The one again.
And the scuttlebutt I'm hearing on that is that Nancy Pelosi has threatened John Conyers that he'll lose his chairmanship of the House committee if he holds impeachment hearings. I find it hard to believe, but Bruce Fein wrote an op-ed this morning, I think it's in Slate or maybe it's Salon, specifically about that, just saying So the word is out. So, you know, it's I think, again, we need to stand up and we need to be speaking out.
Go ahead. I called Pelosi's office. I think she was the one that said she would not want it on being voted on because he is a vice president during the time of war. So I called her office. I said, "This Iraq is not a war. It was an invasion that resulted in an occupation."
Right.
But I don't know if they listen to people who call.
Well, they actually do, Marianne, and more and more of us need to be calling, and that's what we need to do. And also Steny Hoyer. I mean, Steny Hoyer, I saw one of the blogs this morning. I forget which one. I think it was over at the Coase. Somebody said this ought to be taken out of the hands of Nancy Pelosi and put in Steny Hoyer's hands. Well, Steny Hoyer is the guy who day before yesterday said, you know, impeachment is off the table. We're not going to vote on this.
Yeah.
And the Republicans went along with Dennis Kucinich and it ended up in Conyers' committee. But Marianne, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Very good to hear from you. Jeff in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. In introducing my main point, I want to really point out to people that it's something hyper important is we are modifying our Constitution all the time. These trade deals, what I call free rape deals, they supersede the Constitution. It's one of the fatal flaws of especially the corporatization of the world right now. They have found a way around the Constitution.
They're using the Constitution against itself because the Constitution says that treaties are the law of the land.
Yeah, and they supersede our Constitution. So we are modifying it. So these trade deals are hyper important, and Obama and Clinton just caved in on the Peru trade deal.
Really?
So really there's only two progressive candidates out there. It's Edwards and Kucinich, and especially Kucinich. So I agree with the guy who said, hey, donate today. Well, to me there are only two people to donate to, Edwards and Kucinich.
Yeah, I'm with you, Jeff. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Ed in Arlington, Washington. Ed, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Really enjoyed your show. Did get back to this Blackwater thing. That just scares the living bejeebies out of me. I have learned that 60% of the fighters or the people in Blackwater are from foreign nations that have absolutely no allegiance whatsoever to the United States.
Yep. Well, I don't know the percentage, but you're right.
Well,
they're hiring a lot of them.
Right. The number I got out of the magazine was 60%, so I'll just take them at their word. And what's frightening, I don't know how many people realize that during Katrina, Blackwater was sent in to patrol the streets and confiscate guns.
Yeah.
And that is absolutely frightening. It got virtually no play whatsoever.
Yeah, I think, and I think that was much like our whole airport hysteria thing. I think that was... testing the waters. How will military rule work in the United States? If Bush decides to become Musharraf, how's it going to go?
I think it was a dry run.
That's my point.
And,
that's what I just said.
Bush, somehow, especially if he goes ahead and attacks Iran, I think that will generate such a backlash in this country that he'll be able to claim his national emergency, go to martial law, and bring in Blackwater to enforce it. Because I don't think, in talking to police officers out here in Western Washington and some of the rural areas, and they're really torn between duty as far as taking orders and duty as in upholding the Constitution and having foreign fighters coming in and laying down the law.
No, you're absolutely right, Ed. And let's keep in mind that the black shirts in Italy and the brown shirts in Germany that led up to the fascist takeovers in both countries were mercenaries. They were not government. They were not. It was not the army. So, you know, spot on. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Show. Anything Goes Friday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows, anything goes.
Anything Goes Friday. We are going to be interviewing Lou Dobbs top of the next of the hour, but other than that, taking your calls on whatever topic may be on the top of your mind. Ed in Somerville, Massachusetts. Hey, Ed,
hello,
what's in your room today?
Back through the side door into Blackwater.
Okay.
Mr. Bush at this point has a text file of pretty much every conversation that's happened in this country over the last few years via electronic media.
Right, which means telephones, emails.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, he's got to look for a number. The number, let's call it X. That's the number of people who may be held in the new, in his little Bush prisons that have been built outside. By screening those text files and doing some fairly straightforward searches, it should be fairly simple to weigh the likelihood of someone resisting a takeover.
Martial law.
Resisting martial law or dictatorship.
Yeah.
Give that likelihood a gradient over the population and assign a point at which you know how many people you can store, you can lock away, and you can do it.
Yeah.
You can lock everyone up who's likely to...
Well, this is what Musharraf is doing right now.
Yeah. Well,
this is not rocket science. This is what Mussolini did. It's what Franco did. It's what Pinochet did. It's what Hitler did.
Going to happen is what I expect is if we don't cut their legs off before they get back here, that's their job is going to be to arrest and bring us in. He's already running large number arrests.
Yeah. And by cut their legs off, I'm assuming what you mean is pass laws that will protect us from extra legal or paramilitary forces that are not.
I'm not given to kind language. I'm sorry.
No, I understand, but also you know we're on the radio here, and when we make references to violence, they have to be clarified.
Absolutely.
Or else, the FBI might be knocking on your door or mine.
I agree. I apologize. No
need to apologize. I just we all agree that we need to have a legal mechanism. We need to reinstitute posse comitatus to say, sorry, nobody can
absolutely
come after us here in the United States.
But I believe what I'm suggesting is going to happen.
Yeah.
Is going to happen.
I am not able to argue that it won't.
I believe it's quite likely.
I hope it won't. I think it's unlikely. I think that that's probably about as far as our disagreement goes.
I hope you're right.
Yeah.
I hope you're wrong. My friend, I hope you're right.
Yeah. And frankly, a lot of it is going to depend on how many of us are awake, and that means that if every one of us can set as a goal over the next, say, month to wake up 10 people, you know, we got, depending on whose numbers you're looking at, somewhere between 2 and 4 million listeners. If everybody wakes up 10 people, that's a whole lot of people. I mean, that's about as many people as vote.
Yes.
We need, and frankly, I think that there are even some, a few conservatives out there. You know, Bruce Fine writing in, I think it was Slate today. He's been on this program before. A number of conservatives and even probably a few conservative talk show hosts who are starting to wake up. Yeah, absolutely.
This is no longer conservative and liberal.
No, this is America versus anti-America.
This is Constitution or not.
That's right.
And that's what it is, and that's what it's got to be explained to be. It's got to be made clear. I've been writing this for years online. The left-right thing is over, long since over. That's just a shadow play.
It's now, to paraphrase Bush, you're either for America or you're not with America, let's say at the very least. Ed, I
got
to move along. Thank you very much for the call. Chuck in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Hey, Chuck.
Hi, Tom. I want to talk a little bit about a suggestion that I'd want to present to you as in place of impeachment. I mean, I'd be for impeachment, but I agree with your judgment that it's probably not going to happen. But when the crowd in town leaves office there next year, are they going to walk away with impunity? I think that's really a question which haunts me more and more, because if they get away with what they're ravaging of the Constitution, we're in big trouble over the long term. So I'd like to see you think about what I would call something like a Pinochet project, where you could bring together, say, John Dean, Elizabeth de la Vega, Bruce Fine, people have all been on, I've heard on your program, to talk about what do you do after January 2009? Is it lawsuits? Is it, you know, a whole range of things to make it clear to the world and to American government that they can't get away with this even if they succeed in avoiding impeachment?
Yeah, you know, the guy who's doing some great work on this right now is Michael Ratner, Ellen's brother, who is the president or head or whatever his title is, executive director of the Center for Constitutional Rights, ccr-ny.org is their website. And they just successfully, yesterday or the day before, got standing or status or venue or whatever the proper legal word is. I'm not a lawyer, he is. To be able to sue several of these military contractors on behalf of Iraqi families whose family members were tortured at Abu Ghraib and other places, or murdered in other places, in U.S. courts. And that's a huge deal. And so I'd say, you know, as a starting point, the ACLU and the Center for Constitutional Rights, ccr-ny.org and aclu.org, would be great places to start. And also with our elected officials saying, you know, we would like some accountability here. Good point, Chuck. Thank you very much. I got to wrap up this hour. We're going to be talking to Lou Dobbs at the beginning of our next hour, and then the second half of our next hour, we'll be taking your calls, and we'll also hear from Talk Radio News, I'm guessing. 57 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman program right here on Air America Radio. Stick around.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman program. Fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America Radio. Hartman program on Air America Radio. Welcome to the Democracy Zone.
And welcome back, my friends, to the third hour of our program. It's Anything Goes Friday, and we'll be taking your calls at the bottom of the hour. But between now and then, I'm very pleased to have Lou Dobbs with us. Lou Dobbs, if you watch CNN, you've seen his show. He's an American icon. He's on. Well, Lou Dobbs, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, great to be with you.
I live in Portland, Oregon. I'm not sure if we're seeing your show on delay or not out there. Eastern time. What time are you on the air on CNN?
7 o'clock.
7 p.m. Every night at 7 p.m. Eastern. Okay, great. Thank you very much. You have a new book out, Independence Day, Awakening the American Spirit. I have read it, and in fact, I spent most of the day yesterday with it. I was traveling all day, and I think it's brilliant. And I want to congratulate you on that, and glad to have you here on the program. There are a few areas where we agree or we disagree. There's probably a lot of areas where we agree. First of all, I'd like to start out with your political evolution, and which you don't talk about so much in the book, or if you did, I missed that part of it. I think I probably read 75% of every page in it. I've watched your show for years.
Sure.
And I recall 5, 6, 7 years ago, something like that, you just coming out and saying that you were a Republican. And, or maybe I misremember, and just got that impression. But, I certainly had that impression at the time, and you definitely have not been talking like one for a while now.
Well, you're absolutely right. The metamorphosis, I will tell you, as a young man, I worked for the war, worked in the war on poverty. I worked, for the Manpower Development Training Administration. So like most young folks, I suppose, I shouldn't say most, but I won't make that declaration. I was relatively liberal. I've always been a Rockefeller Republican throughout my life. And in 2001, that changed for me. It changed because of, first, frankly, Enron and the corporate corruption scandals. And then September 11th. Both were instructive and frankly formative in changing my thinking and changing my focusing on the reality that I was confronted. And that is corporate America betraying working people, corporate America acting with dishonor, and a government that was not functioning in behalf of the American people. And that changed me. That was my metamorphosis, if you will.
Yeah, and the title of your book, Independence Day, I should point out to our listeners, it's spelled as in independent of something, you know, of a party, I-N-D-E-P-E-N-D-E-N-T-S, not Independence Day as you think of, you know, July 4th. You now call yourself an independent populist.
Right.
The populist movement of the 1880s really was
right.
the biggest populist movement in the United States, right. Was also a blowback against the robber barons and led to arguably the one of our most populist presidents, the Republican Teddy Roosevelt,
right.
And then to the Democrat Franklin Roosevelt, who I would argue was a populist. In your book, toward the end, you talk about we have to ask our leaders why the state of Massachusetts can implement a rational, cost-effective health care system that covers all of its citizens, but the federal government will not. Lou, you're starting to sound like a liberal socialist populist here.
Right. You know, I guess let's take on the issue of liberal. The issue of liberal or conservative, I think, by the way, is completely moot, Tom, and irrelevant right now in this country.
Yeah.
Ideology is really where some really stale minds are basking, and we've got plenty in both political parties. Democrats and Republicans, as I say in the book, there isn't a dime's worth of difference. Both of them dominated by corporate America, both of them in the sway of special interests. Just pick your special interest. And they are truly opposite wings of the same bird, giving the American people the bird. And I'm not going to play. And what we're witnessing right now in this country, Tom, is more and more people signing up as independents. There, yeah. 40% of Americans are now identifying themselves as independents more than are doing so as either Democrats or Republicans. So to your point, when I talk about health care and universal health care, I'm not doing so as a liberal or a socialist. I'm saying point blank that we have got to solve the problem and we've got to deal with the issue because at this point, healthcare is skyrocketing in cost, both for those who provide insurance for healthcare and for those who are, who must have healthcare itself. And we've got to deal with it.
And if nothing else, this has to do with American competitiveness. It's every other country in the world is providing health care to its citizens, every other country that we're seriously competing with anyway. And our manufacturers are having to build this in. In the introduction to your book, you talk about rejecting partisanship. You say we will succeed if the vast majority of us can reject partisanship and end what are nothing more than brand loyalties, essentially, to the Democratic and Republican parties.
Right.
Back in the founding of this country, the Federalist Papers in 1787, 1788, James Madison and Alexander Hamilton writing about it. And as I recall, it was either Federalist 10 or 12. Madison was dealing with this issue. They had created what they suddenly realized was a two-party system. It's not
right.
written into the Constitution, but with first-past-the-post, winner-take-all elections, it wasn't until, 1846, I think, that John Stuart Mill came up with the idea of proportional representation, which is now the standard in most countries. How about something, instead of just saying, to hell with both of them, how about calling for people of both parties? I've written op-eds saying Republicans take back your party, Democrats, and progressives, let's infiltrate the Democratic Party and take it over. We have this two-party system by virtue of the way our Constitution is written. The only thing that could make it, much broader would be instant runoff voting nationwide, which ain't going to happen as long as these two parties have control. Why not call for people to become actually more active within their parties and bring the grassroots populists on both the right and the left into the parties so that the Republican Party can become the party of Eisenhower again and the Democratic Party can become the party of Franklin Roosevelt again, and we can have, rational disagreements, but an absolute consensus that America is first.
Tom, I'll only go back there if I get to watch Leave It to Beaver every day. That's the only way I'm going back to Roosevelt and Eisenhower. And I understand your point, and it's an excellent one, and it's one with which I've wrestled considerably. Let me give you, as best I can, my view. First, it is Federalist 10. James Madison's
yeah.
great nightmare is what we're living. Factionalism is rampant, and it is diluting the body politic to basically just quivering protoplasm. We haven't vibrant voices now in our government. We are no longer those who give our consent to the be governed. Is that radical populist document the Constitution said? We the people no longer matter. Only the elites in both government and economics, the economy and business matter, and we've got to change that. We can't change that if we continue to think that we can take control of these two political parties without dealing with the ownership of those parties, and the ownership is in, corporate America has the deeds to both parties. The reason I call for people to register as independents, and irrespective of your philosophy, which could be defined as either liberal or conservative, or whether your partisanship is Republican or Democrat, just push back against both parties, because until we do, they're going to continue in precisely this direction. I would love to see a populist impulse grip both parties. I would love to see an independent critical judgment applied by every voter, no matter whether he or she called themselves a Republican or a Democrat. It's just not happening. And we've got to recognize we've got to change things, and I truly believe, and I've thought about it as deeply as a television journalist can, and you can argue how deep that is, but I cannot think of another way in which we the people can take back this government.
How about just enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act? The last president to do that was Jimmy Carter. I mean, that as a starting point. AT&T.
But my God, if we did that, I mean, you're talking about having competition. You're talking about.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Oh, Mother of God! I mean, what about those big box stores like Home Depot and Walmart? And the next thing you know, we're going to have entrepreneurialism at the community and neighborhood level.
But that's my point. The tools are here. You know, the tools are here. If we simply started enforcing the Sherman Act as a beginning, and if every taxpayer in America paid $5 a year into a fund, we could have totally publicly funded elections at the rate of spending that's happening right now.
Exactly.
Only it would be taxpayer-owned. We have them in Portland, Oregon. It works wonderfully.
Hey, by the way, we can't have that universal health care because that'd be socialistic.
Right. Well, let's pick up the conversation after the break, if we may.
You got it.
We got Lou Dobbs with us. His new book, Independence Day, Awakening the American Spirit. It's actually a great read, a fascinating read, and not actually, of course it's a great read. And we'll be back with Lou Dobbs right after this break.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
Have you had enough of hypocrisy? rubber stamp. The wire tap.
Yep, it's time to throw the rascals out. And Lou Dobbs, one of the guys out there going off on this every single day on his show on CNN, 7 o'clock Eastern time and, you know, your local time as it may be across the country, has a new book out, Independence Day, Awakening the American Spirit. Lou, the one area where I find myself yelling at the TV when I'm watching you, and I just want to get this on the table and out of the way, because then sure. I want to get on to the, in the 6 minutes we have left, to the imperious presidency and the debtor nation, we're in total agreement. I absolutely agree, and have written, actually even part of one of my books, that a country that doesn't control its immigration policies is a country that's going to end up impoverished, and that the history of the progressive movement starting in the 1870s has been to push back against the attempts to dilute the labor force, in the case of the railroads in the 1880s importing right. labor from China. However, this emphasis on a fence or on a border doesn't make any sense to me. It seems that if we start putting that we don't have an illegal immigrant problem in the United States. We have an illegal employer problem in the United States. We've had an open border with Mexico for 200 years, and it wasn't until after Reagan's amnesty and basically the Reagan administration stopped enforcing, and the unions were so eviscerated by Reagan that they didn't have the power to help enforce the laws against hiring people who are not citizens, right. that, you know, if we don't need to deport people and we don't need fences. If we just stop hiring them, they'll stop coming and most of them will go home.
Well, where are we supposed to disagree?
Oh, well, I thought you were, you know, saying, well, no, we need to put the fence up to keep them out. And I'm saying, I don't think that they'll come if there's not a job for them.
When I told you 2001 was my road to Damascus, okay?
Right.
The issue of national security, we're now more than 6 years after September 11th, and our southern border, our northern border, and all of our ports remain wide open.
But those 17 guys came into this country legally with visas.
I'm sorry?
Those 17 guys who took down those airplanes came into this country legally, or 19 guys, legally with visas.
Well, if you're assuming that the next attack will be carried out in precisely the same way by the same sort of people using the same methodology, that's relevant. But if you are to consider, as this president reminds us, to be fearful of a radical Islamist attack on this country, it would seem to me that the only thing that would be a reasonable response would be to secure our borders and our ports. So that's my view, and it springs from an issue of national security.
Yeah, I agree that our ports, you know, need to be secured because there's material moving across them,
also our borders, and also the fact that, you know, we do have a 30-year war on drugs, which should be a war on addiction, as I write in the book.
Yeah,
but absolutely. The fact is, Mexico is still the principal source of methamphetamines, heroin, yeah. cocaine, and marijuana into this country.
Yeah.
We need to cooperatively, with the government of Mexico, secure that border, as we do with Canada. And there is no reason to continue this, and you alluded to it, but it's a paternalistic relationship between the United States and Mexico that's yeah. over the course of 120 years. It's got to end. We've got to be partners.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And let's talk about debtor nation in
sure.
the few minutes we have left. You do a great job in your book of talking about how bad in debt we are. America's always had some debt, but Reagan really kicked the doors open, and Dick Cheney came along and said, Reagan taught us deficits don't matter.
Yes, exactly.
You beg to disagree.
I do beg to disagree, and I was among those who, through the 80s, watched the Reagan miracle, in which in one decade we rose from $1 to $3 trillion in national debt, which was breathtaking. It was also what led, arguably, to the collapse of the Soviet Union as they tried to match the defense spending that was the primary driver for that huge increase on our national debt. But we now have a $9 trillion, as you know, a $9 trillion national debt, a $6 trillion trade debt after 31 consecutive years of free trade. This free trade that only costs $6 trillion. To this point, $3 billion a day to support with foreign funds that we borrow each day.
Right.
The trade debt is now rising faster faster than our national debt. And we
and these countries are ending up with all our with all these dollars that they can only use to buy up our companies.
Yeah.
So now the profits are going offshore, even if getting me started here.
Well, you and I both can get started, but to listen to Henry Paulson go to Beijing to watch the spectacle of him trying to tell the Chinese how to run their economy to de-link
right.
the one from the dollar, which would, because of the fact that we simply have utter dependence on Chinese imports, it would simply raise prices for American consumers. It's idiotic.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not any way to have a trade policy. You
no.
don't do trade policy by monetary policy.
Exactly.
I mean that's the incredible fallacy of this, going back to Friedmanism and the whole bit. So anyway, the imperial presidency, Lou Dobbs deals with all these things in his books. The imperial presidency, the eating our young, the shadow government, a remarkable book. You've done a great job here, sir.
Thank you.
Independence Day: Awakening the American Spirit is the new book. Lou Dobbs is the author. And Lou, thanks so much for being on the program.
Thank you, Tom. Great to talk with you. Thank you.
Good talking with you. 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Dana in Manhattan, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling in. Hey, Dana.
Hey. Hey, how's it going?
Just fine. What's up?
Something I wanted to ask Lou and these other anti-illegal immigration advocates. Where is their rogues gallery of illegal employers on their websites or their weekly segment on, this company's displacing, American workers for illegals and driving down wages. I mean, that, where they most typically fall short in their Sturm and Batarang is, they don't really get far enough, into the reality of the issue that, it's union busting, it's driving down wages, it's holding, it's putting up resistance to, a national living wage.
Yeah.
And the creation of a new slave state.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. And I think the big problem is that there are racists out there who are running around going, "Oh my God, it's brown people coming." And that has become part of a subtext to the debate, tragically. And there are xenophobes out there, we shouldn't let anybody in. Actually, I think that we need to dramatically reform our immigration policy. There are people all around the world who we should be letting into the United States. I mean, we've created a refugee crisis in Iraq, for example. It's a disaster. You got children dying in Darfur right now
with the southern border right now, it was bad enough when we had these, this little ragtag band of wannabe Klansmen called the Minutemen. Show up on the border to, take pot shots at Mexicans, but now they have armed air support in the form of Blackwater.
Yeah. To give Lou Dobbs his due, though, I have seen on his program a number of times when he's gone after individual companies. But it's not ultimately going to be about the rogues gallery or about identifying individuals or whatever. I mean, it's going to have to. This is stuff that is going to have to be dealt with at the political level.
Well, it's a start. I mean, it's better than nothing. I mean, it's definitely a start, and it would give him, putting his name on the line by taking on individual big, especially big companies.
Yeah.
It makes it like he's just stuck with Dick Parsons in his mouth.
Yeah. Well, good point, Dana. Thank you. Although I would suggest that probably across the United States, if you look at who's employing illegal immigrants or people, undocumented workers, whatever you want to call them, probably there's more small and medium-sized companies than there are large companies. But it's just a simple process. I don't think that we need national ID cards. I don't think, frankly, that we need, fences and things along our border. Everybody gets a Social Security card and a Social Security number, and it's fairly easy for the Social Security Administration when you submit this information, to say, yeah, this that is who that person says they are. It's not rocket science. So Anyway, 1-866-303-2270. Philip in West Virginia. Hey, Philip, what's in your mind
today? Hello, Tom. How you doing?
Just fine. What's up?
Okay. the topic I'd like to speak with you, this is something which I'd like to hear your comments, basically, is on Thomas Paine's document that he wrote in 1785 called Agrarian Justice.
Mm-hmm.
Are you well acquainted with that?
I have not read it. I'm familiar with it. But
okay.
I can't say that I've sat down and read the document like I have Common Sense or I have The Rights of Man.
Right. Well, I first came across this about the beginning of this year, and I was quite astounded by it, actually, in what it implies. Well, anyway, the context of it, in a nutshell, is that he advocated a guaranteed income for every American citizen, in which every person, when they reached the age of 21, would receive so much, you know, a stipend. The thrust of it is that he didn't consider this as a handout. He considered it as a right of every human, every American citizen to have.
Paine was, I mean, you go back and read Rights of Man. I wrote a review for this over at BuzzFlash.com, and you track back to the archive of my reviews there, or maybe you can find it at TomHartmann.com, click Articles on Democracy, and there's a link to it. And I quote extensively from Paine's Rights of Man. He proposed Social Security. He proposed minimum wage laws. He proposed child labor laws. He proposed national health care. I think basically he proposed the right to unionize as an absolute right. Franklin Roosevelt, I don't know if Franklin Roosevelt ever read The Rights of Man, but he sure put it into place. And Paine was the original, yes, let's redistribute the wealth and let's just call it that, right up front, guy. And it sounds like agrarian justice either came before or after Rights of Man, and one amplified on the other, because what you're saying is also in Rights of Man, and, you know, which he wrote in large part to rebut Sir Edmund Burke. He had spent 2 weeks at Burke's house in London on his way to France during the French Revolution, and where he then ended up in prison. And he had this just knockdown drag out fight, this battle with Burke, and Burke was, of course, the world's most influential conservative at the time in the United States and in England, and Paine's rebuttal to Burke was that to write that book, The Rights of Man, and so I'll have to familiarize myself with agrarian justice. Philip, thanks for sensitizing me to it. I appreciate it. Mike in Corvallis, Oregon. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, a quick comment about your 9/11 segment and a question about gold, if it's all right.
Yeah.
Building 7, anybody who sees that can just tell that it was brought down. I don't believe it was meant to look that way. I believe that Flight 93 was slated to hit that building, and their alibi went down, so they lit it on fire, waited a while, and pulled it.
Could be. I think that Flight 93 was destined for Washington, D.C., probably for the White House, but...
That's what they tell you, but I mean, if Pennsylvania, you know, how can you tell, really?
Right.
Anyway, gold, in 33, they called in all the gold. Do you know how they paid for that, or if they did? I mean, did they give the going rate?
It was $35 an ounce, and Roosevelt said you can't own gold privately, something that, you know, I think was a mistake. I you know, there's a few things Roosevelt did that, in turn, the Japanese, for example. You know, he wasn't a perfect guy or a perfect president. But,
right.
Yeah, he called in the gold, and they paid for it at the prevailing rate.
Oh, okay. There's no way they could bring that rate down and then...
No. It wasn't a, you know, screw the American people thing. It was a try to get control of your money supply thing during the Great Depression.
Yeah, well,
and what he gave in exchange, by the way, were gold certificates. The dollar at that time was backed by gold.
Right.
And so, you know, he said, we're just going to have paper currency in this country. And that's what he did. And so onward it went. Thanks a lot for the call, Mike. Bill in Oakland, California. Hey, Bill.
Oh, Tom. Sorry, I'm chewing an energy bar. Okay, I have a couple things. I'd like to get a seat at Little Fox Theater. I was there in March. Next,
Yeah, if you want to see it at the theater for the gig that we're doing next week, next Friday in San Francisco, you have to go to Kay Green's website, and that's where the tickets are.
Yeah,
which I believe is I believe it's green960.com. I don't have it right in front of me, but you can easily Google it.
I haven't bought a computer yet. I'm going to try to do that.
All right, or you can call a radio station.
Okay. I just have to mention, you just gave me another book. I really like your conversation with Lou Dobbs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just about to go independent, and I just put all my political books in one cabinet, one bookcase, and it's 70 books and another 30 on the list. You just gave me another one.
Yeah.
But I really believe this is the history of this time when it's not being on TV, it's not in the newspapers. What else can you do, you know?
Yeah. Well, actually, I think it is. I think Lou Dobbs' show is moving more toward commentary, as I said, you know, to him. There are some areas where I disagree with him, others where I agree with him. But I think that, by and large, we are both populists. And I'm probably a little more left populist, and he's a little more right populist. And there's some areas where we disagree, probably, but it is a startlingly good read. I found it fascinating. My 3-hour flight yesterday turned into a 9-hour flight with bumps and delays and everything else, and I had time to sit down and read the book all the way through, and I was favorably impressed, shall we say. Joe in Ohio. Hey, Joe.
Hello. Good afternoon. I'd like to make a comment about Kucinich and the Democratic nominations. You indicated you gave money to Edwards and to Kucinich. I have a theory about how this is being controlled, these elections. I think that Hillary Clinton and or Obama have been chosen by the corporate media, and they're playing both sides of the election. I think Kucinich is actually the overwhelming favorite. And if you look at the issues, 11% approval rating of Congress, Kucinich does not go along with Congress. He clearly stands out. He is in the majority position of all Americans. But what is happening is the polls that are being presented, and even on, well, and the lack of presentation on progressive stations, is creating the illusion that Kucinich can't win, and under this illusion, he can't win. But I just was given a recent poll from Democracy for America. Did you see it?
I did, and Edwards actually won that poll.
Actually,
and Kucinich came in second.
You can go on to the interaction, okay? Kucinich won 42 states. Edwards won 1, Al Gore won 5, and Obama won 2. If you go on that poll, and the California straw poll, he was a close second to Edwards.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that they're both viable candidates, Joe. I'm with you there, and I'm also with you in that I think that the corporate media thinks that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are just fine with them, thank you very much. And everybody in corporate America is terrified of John Edwards and Dennis Kucinich.
Truth in broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Hey, thanks so much this week to my producer, well, and every week, to my producer David Poole, to Louise Hartman, tomorrow, 35 years, to Chris Lopresto and Lauren Kirshner of Air America, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room, and to Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening. Thank you. Thank you. Ellen, and thanks to Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service and Talk Radio News for being with us every day. Hey, Ellen, how you doing?
Thank you. Happy anniversary. My guys at the border of Turkey, who are, I think, on an airplane right now and can't talk to you, are telling me that there's all kinds of planes at the border, American trained pilots, American paid for planes, but run by the Turkish military, that are patrolling the border every 2 minutes trying to scare off the PKK.
The Turkish-Iraq border.
That's right, yeah. Turkish-Iraq border.
Yeah.
A couple other interesting things. The House just passed the alternative minimum tax bill just a short while ago. 216 to 193. The Hispanic caucus got furious with him because they felt like the offsets and the other things that they were trying to do did not meet their needs, and they were worried about the alternative minimum tax on Hispanic families and some other issues. In any case, and it does not look like it's going to do very well in the Senate.
I'm sorry, I missed the very beginning. What piece of legislation is this?
The alternative minimum tax.
Oh, okay. Right, okay.
And what's fascinating about this is that with this alternative minimum tax bill that just passed and probably will not pass the Senate, the Democrats want to do tax offsets. So in other words, they want to get rid of some of the other tax breaks for large corporations or wealthy individuals, et cetera. But the White House is saying if they do the offsets, in other words, if they balance the budget on this, then they are not going to, the president is going to veto it.
Hmm. Interesting. Interesting.
A few other interesting things now going on. China has apparently today also let everybody know via its foreign minister that they consider themselves a developing country, and therefore they say that climate change is caused by developing countries, and therefore they are not going to deal with any limits on their greenhouse gases when the Bali conference happens very shortly. This is to redo the Kyoto protocol. So they're signaling they are not going to be part of this. A president today, finally, he called, as you know, I believe yesterday, he called Pakistani President Musharraf. Bhutto was under house arrest. Then the White House apparently put on some pressure. Now she's not under house arrest. And Secretary Gates this morning at the Pentagon said that he's very worried that what's going on in Pakistan could clearly affect Afghanistan. And, of course, Afghanistan was hit with another suicide bomber today.
Yeah.
So that's going on. A couple other interesting issues going on, and that, of course, is the budget. And what is going to happen with the budget next week. The White House is really saying that they are going to, anything that they consider, to be too much money, they're going to veto. Now, it's okay for the Democrats to put too much money in the farm bill and get it vetoed, but God forbid they should get rid of, some of the tax breaks. No, no, no. The White House is going to veto that as well.
Oh, my. My. We can't have that, can we?
No, we certainly cannot.
What's your take on Chuck Hagel pushing back on the whole Iran thing?
Well, I think that Hagel has somehow been the voice of reason in the last couple of years. And
is that why he's leaving the party? Or leaving elective office?
Well, I think that's why he's done. I think he just realizes he can't deal with it at all.
Yeah.
And he just says, this is not a party that I'm comfortable with. And so I think that's why he's doing it. I think, you know, at a certain point, you're also really, really sick of raising a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the other interesting thing. One other thing, as you look at the vote last night on Mukasey, 53-40. And as you know, there were some people that did not show up for the vote, and Biden, Clinton, Dodd, and Obama, the presidentials, were not there to talk about where they would see Mukasey.
Right, although they're all on the record as being opposed to him, and apparently the vote was held at such a last minute that they didn't have time to get to Washington, D.C. to do the vote.
Well,
and
right.
You wonder, you know, what was Harry Reid thinking? I mean, we talked with Bernie Sanders earlier, and he said if we had known that they didn't have 60 votes for him, you know, there's any number of people in the Senate, I'm thinking probably Bernie Sanders and Russ Feingold, who would have initiated a filibuster.
I don't disagree with that, but the point is that Harry Reid sent out a message to the presidential senators, hopeful senators, and said, listen, guys, you know, you got to be here during votes, and that means Tuesday afternoon, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. You have the other days of the week to campaign, and we want you in the Senate. And
right.
They're just, you know, their job first is being senators.
Right. But right now they're AWOL.
And right now they're very AWOL, all
yeah.
of them.
Yeah. But the reality is that even if they had all been there and they had all done what they said that they were going to do, which is vote against Mukasey, his nomination could have been blocked if Reid had notified the rest of the Democratic caucus that there weren't 60 votes.
Right. And, so and some of it is on, I agree, some of it's on Reid, but some of it is also on them for not being there when they're doing the business of the Senate.
Yeah. No, that's, you're absolutely right. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thanks, Ellen.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you very much. Coming up Monday on the Tom Hartman program, I'll be challenging conservative John Barilow. He says environmentalists are responsible for all those fires. Co-director of The War, PBS documentary, Lynn Novick, is here, and Aliza Marcus dropping by on Blood and Belief, the PKK and the Kurdish fight for independence. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you, activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. Have a great weekend. See you Monday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.